Good morning to everybody. Really great to see everybody here. As I mentioned, I'm just going to pop onto the chat now, the source sheets, so that anybody who doesn't have them yet will be able to download them straight away. Here they come now. So I hope everybody had a good week. I don't have any sponsorships to report today. First week in a few weeks that there are no sponsors for the share. If anybody wants to sponsor the share, then please be in touch with Mrs. Spivak. We're very excited to receive your sponsorship, and it's very much appreciated. As I mentioned, please, if anybody wants to receive the sheets in advance, please send their email now to David Hochhauser. And if I could just remind people, please to mute their microphones. I actually can't hear anybody, but a few people apparently can hear other people as well. So if you could just mute your mics, that would be great. Okay, we've got a lot to do today, and it's going to take us to some very interesting places indeed. We are in a series dealing with Jews, non-Jews, and mitzvot. And we looked 2 weeks ago the issue of mitzvahs, Bnei Noach, the seven Noachide laws, the Sheva mitzvahs. We analyzed a little bit what they were, how they apply. Last week we looked at the fascinating halachic, relevant halachic question of Lifnei Iver, which is the mitzvah on Jews, not to cause other people, Jews or non-Jews, to either to give them bad advice or to cause them to sin in some way. And we saw that the mitzvah of Lifnei Iver is actually formulated by Chazal very much in terms of what you can and can't do for a non-Jew. So that is one of the important interfaces, if you like, of our awareness of Sheva mitzvahs and what they really mean. Today, I want to move into a new area. And next week, I want to complete this series. And I'll tell you in a minute what I want to do next week. I think next week's going to be very special, Be'ezrat Hashem. We talked about the fact that there is a Brit with Noach. There's a Brit for the Bnei Noach, and then there's a Brit at Sinai. And once we reach the Brit at Sinai, we, the Jews, are no longer bound specifically by the Brit Noach, because we're not Bnei Noach. We're Bnei Israel. We're bound by the Brit Sinai and the Britot that came after that. However, there's a group of people in the middle who are somewhere between Bnei Noach and Bnei Israel. And these are the people we're reading about at the moment in the parasha, which are, of course, the Avos. And I want to talk today about an issue that Chazal debate and discuss because it's relevant to us, and we'll talk about why it's relevant to us. I want to talk about the issue of the Avos and how they connected with Torah. Were they Bnei Noach? Were they non-Jews plus? Were they proto-Jews? Were they full-fledged Jews? Did they keep the Torah? If so, what kind of Torah did they keep? Again, this is a topic which is discussed at length by the Chazal and Meforshim, not because of some kind of historical or eclectic interest, but because the issue affects us very much today. Because we today have both Brit Sinai and Brit Avot. And I started talking about this last week. We may not have Brit Noach anymore as Jews, but we definitely have Bris Aves. And the Judaism that we keep is not just a result of the Sinai experience, but is a strong result of the Avos experience too. So next week, what I actually want to do is I want to finish this series by contrasting Brit Avot and Brit Sinai, what it means practically for us today, halachically and hashkafically. And I want to look at that through the lens of three major thinkers next week. They are Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, who has a lot to say about this, through the eyes of Rav Soloveitchik and through the eyes of Rav Kook. So three big thinkers of the last 120 years, Rav Kook, Rav Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Sacks. I'd like to look at this issue of Bris Avos, Bris Sinai, and again, this is a very relevant question as to how we view our role in the world, our connection with mitzvahs, our connection with God, etc. A very important topic. But for today, we're on the issue of the Avos. And did the Avos keep the Torah, or did they not keep the Torah? Now, you're all going to tell me, well, of course they kept the Torah. Isn't that what they tell us in Cheder, that the Avos, Avram, kept the Torah? Didn't Avram wear a strimal? Surely Avram wore a strimal. Maybe not the strimal, but we'll see that Avram Avinu, say Chazal, definitely kept the Torah. So I'm also going to share the screen now. We're going to have a real ride through the worlds of Pshat, Drash, Remez, Sod into the worlds of Kabbalah as well as to what was the relationship of the Avos with the Torah. And actually, this is going to throw up today a lot of fundamental hashkafic principles as to how we today also relate to tarot. This is why I think this topic is so important, because it's not just, if you like, historical or text focused, it's very relevant hashkafically as well. So let's have a look here. Let's start at the place that you'd expect us to start. Avraham Avinu has died. At the beginning of this last week's parsha, Parsha's told us, and Yitzchak is told he will get a brocha. And God says to Yitzchak the following, number one, Birbesi et zarcha, I will increase your children, kekoch ve'ashamayim, like the stars of the heaven, v'nasati lezarcha et kol ha'aretzot ha'el, I will give you this land of Canaan, v'hitzbaruchu bezarcha kol ge'ah ha'aretz, and all of the world will be blessed through your children. These are the classic brochas that Abraham gave, that God gave to Abraham, the land, the children, the blessing to the world. But here there's a reason, ekev. Because, and I'll tell you why you're getting this, he says, Asher shama Avram bekoli, Avram listened to my voice, v'yishmor mishmarti, he observed my, we'll translate these words soon, my protective mitzvot, whatever, mitzvotai, chukotai, v'torotai. That Avram did all of those things. There are five things here. Shema bekoli, he listened to my voice, he kept mishmarti, mitzvotai, Chukotai v'torotai. Now, what are all those things? God has just said to Yitzchak that you're going to get this brocha because your father kept all of these types of mitzvot. Rav Menachem Liebtag, who has obviously a vast amount of material on his website and on the VBM website about on the Pshat issues, he breaks it down and he says basically there are three approaches of the Meforshim. One approach is that let's look through Abraham's life and see where these words, like buzzwords, come up. These key words, mishmarti, mitzvotai, torotai. That's one approach of the Meforshim, the Rashbam, the Chizkuni, and others. Another approach is to say, let's look later in Chumash and see where these words come up and see if we can connect them then with Abraham's life. That's, we'll see soon, Rashi's approach very much on a drash basis. And then we have a third approach, which is, let's have a look at what these concepts mean, what they could be referring to, not in very specific terms, but in general terms, and see how that relates to Abraham's life. And what I want to give you to start with is three pshat approaches to this. Before we get into the world of drash and deeper hashkofa, let's just look at, on a pshat basis, what does it mean that Avraham Avinu kept all of these different types of mitzvot? So first of all, let's look at the Rashbam, who looks through Abraham's life and says, "Ooh, let's zero in on these key words and we'll work out what all of these mitzvahs are talking about." So look at what he says here, number two. Ekev asher shema Avraham bekoli. So the shema bekoli, he says, is al akedah, that he did the akedah. Dichsiv ekev asher shemata bekoli, direct parallel. Shema bekoli, shemata bekoli. Great. But Yishmor Mishmarati, says the Rashbam, could go in Mila. This is a reference to Bris Mila, because it says there, the Et Brisi Tishmor. Oh, again, direct word. Mitzvotai, could go in Mitzvah Shmona Yamim, the mitzvah to give Bris Mila to babies at 8 days. Dichsiv Ka'ashet Siva Oto Elukim. Again, direct hit with the word Siva. Chukotai v'Torotai is a bit harder, because there isn't the word, the word chukot and torot is not given directly, is not mentioned directly with Abraham. He says here, lefi ikka pshuto, what does this mean on a pshat level? Kom mitzvahs hanikarot, the mitzvot hanikarot, the mitzvahs that he kind of recognized that he had to keep, kagon gezel, theft. We see, for example, from the story of Avimelech taking the well, that theft was a real issue that he was trying to campaign against. Arayot, chimud, sexual immorality and desiring things that other people have. We see from Sarah, Avimelech, and the story of Sarah and Paro. Dinim, the laws of setting up courts. We see justice from Sodom, Malki Tzedek, etc. And hachnasat orchim, from his own life with the angels. These are areas of mitzvah that Avraham Avinu connected to. Kulam hayo noigin kodem matan Torah. All of these things, says the Rashbam, applied before the Torah was given. And we'll get to that tomorrow, which is that the Torah was renewed at Sinai. We don't keep Hachnasas Orchim because Avraham Avinu did. We don't even keep Brit Milah because Avraham Avinu did. We keep them because we were commanded at Sinai, and that's a topic that we need to look at next week. Why does it make a difference that these mitzvahs were renewed? How does that change them? How does that change our relationship with them? Many people, I think, would say, well, surely we do bris because of Avraham Avinu. Not true. If you ask 1,000 Jews, why is there a mitzvah of hachnasas orchim? I can guarantee you 999 out of 1,000 will say, Avram Avinu, surely Avram Avinu is where we learn that from. And the answer is, nope, not true. The mitzvah of Avas, of Hachnasas Orchim is learned from after Har Sinai. Next week we'll look at that in more detail. But that's the Rashbam's initial approach, that all of these things refer to things in Avram's life. The Ramban, on a pshat level, before he gets into deeper drush, in number 3 says, v'apshat ne'mar, and he goes through these words and he says, slightly different spin on them. Mishmarati is emunat ha'elokut, the belief in monotheism, in God's existence and oneness, shehem in b'shem ha'miyuchad, v'shama mishmeret zo b'libot, that he guarded this special connection with God in his heart, v'chalak bo kol avdi avodah zorah, and he disputed with all the other, the Ovdei Avodah Zorah, as we know from the Midrashim, etc. Mitzvotai, he says, is lech lecha. When God told Avram, lech lecha me'atzecha, that was a direct command, and also to bring up his son, and to exclude Hagar, to send away Ishmael, etc. Chukotai is lelecha b'darchei Hashem liyot chanun rachum, is these ideas of copying God, to be gracious, and to be kind, but it's tzedakah, to give tzedakah, etc. And Torotai is mila. He has a different way of defining them up, and then at the end he throws in, u'mitzvahs b'nei Noach kulam, and also don't forget the Sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach, sheheim Torah lahem, because they were bound by those mitzvahs. Now that's interesting, because that begins to open up our question, which is, well, what were the avos? Were they basically non-Jews with extras? And the Ramban seems to say here, well, it looks they were basically bound by the Sheva mitzvahs, but they had a few extra things along the way that were given to them. And in fact, the Sheva mitzvahs is one of the main approaches of the other pshat, if you like, angle, which is Rabbeinu Bachya and also others as well. If you look for a second in number 4, the Yishmol Mishmarati Mitzvosai Chukosai V'Sorosai, Al Davar Al Derech HaPshat, he says, if you want a pshat answer, Yom Ezeh Al Mitzvah Shinitzavu B'Ninoch. This is simply talking about the Sheva Mitzvot. It doesn't mean that Avram kept Shabbos or Avram kept Shatnas or any of that. He kept the Sheva Mitzvot B'Ninoch, and he goes through how each of them relate. Mitzvotai is Gezel, is theft, and shvichas damim, a murder injury. Chukotai is eva min achai, and kilayim shel behema, and crossbreeding animals, and v'harkavas ilan, and trees, which we saw was an issue which affects the Sheva mitzvahs. Torotai is dinim, and avodah zorah is the justice system and idolatry. She'elu kulam nitzdavu behem b'nei Noach, these were all commanded to b'nei Noach, v'hu ha'shomev ha'oisir etzom baro, and that's what God wanted them to do at that time. And then he says, and that the point is that Avram Avinu didn't just keep them, but he developed them. He expanded them. He made it like a Torah out of the Sheva mitzvahs. And we see a Chazal here we didn't see last week. Masechet Avodah Zorah de Avram Avinu. Avram's Masechet Avodah Zorah is Dalad Meis Pirkei Hav. It was 400 chapters long. Now, that's, I think, meant to be a symbolic number. It's not meant to be an actual, we don't have any book which is Avram Avinu's Maseches Avodah Zorah. But it's simply saying that whilst our Maseches Avodah Zorah is relatively short, his developed Maseches Avodah Zorah, his attitude and his details of laws of Avodah Zorah was very detailed. Detailed laws at the time were well known. Think of the Code of Hammurabi. The Code of Hammurabi is 282 very detailed laws that we dug up. Presumably, there are more where that came from as well. And in fact, this connection with the Avos and the Sheva Mitzvahs is very clear on a pshat level. And even Chazal, give that too, if you look at number 5, Vayeshev Avram al Na'arav, Vayashav Avram al Na'arav, where it says that that Avram returned after the Akedah to the boys, but Yitzchak did not. One of the big questions, where was Yitzchak after the Akedah? Avram went back alone. Where did Yitzchak go? Chazal say here in Bereishis Rabbah, Yitzchak Heichan Hu, where was Yitzchak? Rabbi Barachi, B'Shem Rabbanon, the Tzman, and Rabbi Barachi reports the following, Shalchu Etzel Shem, Lilmod Mimeno Torah. He sent him to Shem to learn Torah. There is a Torah of Shem, the Sheva Mitzvahs, also possibly a mystical Torah, we'll get to that later, but we're still on a pshat level. There is a Torah of shame that Avram Avinu has sent Yitzchak to learn. And therefore, there is this idea that they had these mitzvahs, they developed these mitzvahs, and they turned them into a, if you like, a real Torah. Of course, Yaakov as well. Later, we see goes to the yeshiva of Aver. Shem and Aver figure strongly in the background. What exactly the yeshiva of Shem and Aver look like? They call it a yeshiva. I don't think it looked like Ponovitch. I don't know whether it looked like an ashram or a retreat in the countryside, or I've no idea, or whether the whole idea of the yeshiva means here the idea that they were developing in an academy of some kind altogether. That's an unknown question, but there was such a thing as a study of those laws. Fine. That's in the world of pshat. So when it says Avraham kept Torah time, Mishmarti, etc., on a pshat level, the Meforshim relate that to his life, to the Sheva Mitzvahs, etc. But let's move into Drash. Because the Mishnah, at the end of Kiddushin, the end of Masechtas, often the Mishnah just waxes lyrical a little bit. The Mishnah is usually very kind of hard-nosed, black and white, halachic. But every now and then, at the end of the Masechta, the Mishnah kind of moves into more agadic mode. And here it says the same thing. Matsinu, we find, it says the Mishnah in Kiddushin, at the number six, She'asa Avram Avinu et kol haTorah kula asheloi nita. That Avram did, Asa did the whole Torah before it was given. Now, there is another girsa here, which will be important, which is Shekiem, that he fulfilled, and we'll see later, there may be a difference between those two words. Most of the texts that we have say Asa, that he did. Some say Kiem, and we'll see the Gemara in Yuma says Kiem. But he did, or he fulfilled the Torah before it was given, and it brings the Pasuk. Ekev Asher Shema Avraham, etc., etc. Now, I once read the most ridiculous article in some newspaper in England, some Jewish newspaper, that said that the rabbis say that Abraham kept the Torah before it was given. Isn't that ridiculous? How could he keep the Torah before it was given? Surely that's evidence that the rabbis don't know what they're talking about. You know, the kind of amoratsis that you read in the newspapers is sometimes astounding. Good, thank you. This is it's Murphy's Law. This is the first week that I haven't actually said at the beginning of this year, if there's a problem with the internet, don't worry, I'll be back as soon as I can be. So maybe that is the segula, that every week I'll remind me, please, to say, if there's a problem with the internet, then don't worry, I'll be back soon. It's like I remember on first night sukkahs, Rabbi Kimchi always used to stand up in shul and say, these are the halachas if it rains on first night sukkahs, and this is the segula that we learn this, that it never rains on first night sukkahs. Okay, that didn't always work either, but we're back again. So let's pick up where we left off. I do apologize for that, but we're back in business. Okay, let's have a look at the Drash angle. The Drash angle takes us into a fascinating place. We may have to miss a couple of things out now in order to get through that. We just said that Chazal said that Avram kept the whole Torah. Have a look in number seven, please. Amar Rav, Kiem Avram Avinu et kol haTorah kula. Avram fulfilled the whole Torah. He uses the word Kiem there. Shnei Amar, he brings the Pasuk that we've been learning. Amalei Rav Simi Bar Chiya Rav Eim Sheva Mitzvahs. Maybe that means the Sheva Mitzvahs. Maybe that doesn't mean the whole Torah. Ah, Haike Nami Mila. But what about Mila? He kept Mila as well. No, the Eim Sheva Mitzvahs Mila. Maybe it means Sheva Mitzvahs and Mila, and nothing else. Amalei, no. Im Kein Mitzvotai Torah Tai Lameli. Why does it say Mitzvot Torah, etc.? Amar Rava Veitem Rav Ashi. Kiem Avram Avinu Afilu Eruvei Tavshilin. Avram kept even Eruv Tavshilin. Very famous statement. We need to unpack that statement. Shnei Ma Torah Tai, Acha Torah Shibichtav, Acha Torah Shemalpeh. Avram kept Torah Shibichtav, he kept the written Torah, he kept the oral Torah. And at first it seems that Eruv Tavshilin is just the example of the most rabbinic detail you can think of, even that Avram Avinu kept. In fact, there may be more of a connection there than you think. In the Ein Yaakov, in the Iyun Yaakov commentary there, it says, what is Eruv Tavshilin? How does Eruv Tavshilin work? Eruv Tavshilin is the halachic mechanism whereby you can cook on Yom Tov for the next day, which is Shabbos. But why? On the basis of something called Hoyle. Hoil means maybe, it could be, since guests may come today on Yom Tov, and if these guests come, then this food will be for Yom Tov, and I hope they do come. But really, I think it's going to be for Shabbos, but you never know. So that's Avraham Avinu's life. Avraham Avinu's life is Hoyle. Maybe guests will come. I live in the hope that they will come. So Erev Tashilin actually is connected to him. However, I brought you in the sheet that there are Girsos that say that Erev Tchumim and Erev Chatzeros. And certainly Yaakov Avinu has more of a connection with Erev Tchumim than Erev Chatzeros. He made Tchumim for the town, etc. But it sounds like we're getting into very, very specific detail. And in fact, that's what Rashi says. Rashi, which is probably the most famous comment on this that people know. I brought you a number 8. First, I wanted you to see the Pshat approaches. Rashi says there, Vayishma mishmati gzeirot laharchaka al asarosh shebatorah. He kept the drabonons, kagon shnius la'arai, shvus la'shabbos. All the rabbinic laws of Shabbos, Avraham Avinu was keeping. Mitzvoisai includes, he says, Gezel and Shvichas Damim. Chukotai includes, he didn't eat pork, he didn't wear shatnas, all of the chukim that are not so obvious. And Torotai, even Torah Shebal Peh. So Rashi definitely presents us with a picture that sounds like the Avos really kept the whole Torah, not just the things that related to them. And there are other indications of that. I brought you here, we'll breeze through quite quickly. Noach says, it says about Noach that he brought the behemoths which were tahorah, which were kosher, and Rashi brings there the Chazal. It says, Lamadnu, number 10, Shalamad Torah, Noach Torah. Noach knew Torah. He knew what was kosher, what was not kosher. Lot, famously, it says, when Lot invited the Malachim to him, Vayaslehem Mishter, he made them food and drink, Matzot Afa Vayochena. He baked matzahs. Why did he bake matzahs? Rashi says, Pesach Haya. What do you do on Seder night? You bake matzahs. Well, excuse me, Lot was living 400 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why was he eating matzahs? So there are interesting midrashic connections, by the way, between Lot and Yetzias Mitzrayim. I brought you a footnote from a very fascinating article that was written by Rav Ari Khan that compares Lot's escape from Sodom and all the words used and the issues that he faced with the Malachim to the Jewish people's escape from Mitzrayim and them leaving Mitzrayim. And there's a very fascinating parallel there. So that could be what Chazal are alluding to midrashically. But okay, they say Lot ate matzahs because it was Pesach. Yaakov, when he brings the two Gedeim in last week's Parsha, so Rashi quotes there, again, quite famously, does he need to eat two whole goats? But rather, no, one of those goats was his Korban Pesach, because again, it was Pesach. Yaakov had to bring Korban Pesach. Maybe it was Yitzchak bringing Korban Pesach. They had to do all of these things. And perhaps the most famous comment of all, coming up in next week's Parsha, V'tzavotam le'mor, kol tamrula adoni le'esav, or the week after next, rather, say this to Esav, Koma avdecha Yaakov. This is what Yaakov has to say. Im Lavan garti ve'icher ad ichar ad ata. Im Lavan garti. I lived with Lavan, says Rashi. Garti begematria. And here we have a bit of remez. Gematria is Taryag. Very famous Rashi. Kloima im Lavan harosha garti ve'taryag mitzvahs shamarti. I lived with Lavan and I kept all Taryag mitzvahs. Now, how do we understand this? Because, of course, nobody can really keep all 613 mitzvahs. You have to be both a man and a woman and a Kohen and a Levi and a Yisrael to be keeping every single mitzvah. So you could just turn around midrashically and say, it doesn't really mean he kept all Taryag mitzvahs. It means he was connected deeply with mitzvahs. So when it says that the Avos kept Shabbat, for example, it doesn't mean that they dafka kept specifically Shabbat. It means that they really connected with the ideas. Look at this Me'iri. The Me'iri, number 14, a lesser known source. He takes this whole idea that the Avos kept the Torah and he gives it a midrashic swing, a midrashic spin. He says here, number 14, Kiyam Avraham Avinu kol haTorah kula afilo Erev Chatzeros. Interesting, he says Erev Chatzeros there, not Erev Tashlim. Romez al David hakal shebachol Yisurei Shabbos, meaning he was connected to even the lightest, even the smallest ideas of Erev Shabbos. Kolaima, what does this mean? What does this really mean? Shekol anyan nyanim hanimsarim beinyan haShabbos, all the deep ideas that have to be transmitted that are based in Shabbos. Shebehem emunas achidosh, that God created the world. Shehi hapina gedoyle shebepina satatiyot, the most fundamental of religious principles. Lamad, it means that Avram learned them. Umasa la'am haKodesh, he passed them on. V'zeo gam kein etzel mashe amru, and this also connects with what it says when he kept Eruv Tavshilin. Erev Tavshilin, he goes to say Shehudava Hakal Shebecholin Yani Hamoadot, meaning the details of the festival laws. Ramiz Lios Inyan Modad Nigra Achadunas Hashabbos, meaning the festival laws are also connected with Shabbat. And Kulam Inyan Sovevad Inyan Yitzis Mitzrayim. And also Yitzis Mitzrayim. What does it mean, Yitzis Mitzrayim? Shehamanat Inyanehim Yaminu Pina Datsio Be'inyan Gemul, that God drives the world, God is the God of history. But Onesh, God is involved in Hashkacha of the world, the Hashkacha Vishinu Hativin, etc. Meaning the Meiri wants to take a very midrashic approach and say, look, when it says that Avram kept Shabbos and Avram kept Pesach and Avram ate matzahs, etc., it means the ideas that underpin these fundamental mitzvahs, the emunas of God as creator, God as the God of history, God as the God that runs the world. These were big chidushim. These were very big new ideas. And it means that Avram took these ideas and passed them through his family. It doesn't mean literally, says the Meiri, that he kept every specific detail of Shabbos. There's one approach that you can take. There are much more mystical approaches. If you look in the writings of the Kabbalah, they talk much more about the idea that Avram Avinu kept Pesach and Lot was eating matzahs. Why? Because there is a mystical vibe that goes with the day. Every day of the Jewish calendar has with it a spiritual underpinning. And the 15th of Nisan has an underpinning throughout all of humanity, throughout all of history, has this spiritual reality of Pesach, whatever that means on a spiritual level. So it's not that we eat matzah because we came out of Mitzrayim on the 15th, says the Kabbalah. It's that we came out on the 15th because this was the night that already had that built-in spiritual reality of a redemptive night. And therefore, the Avos were, of course, tuned into that completely. Now, of course, they ate matzahs. Even though matzahs, you might think, symbolize the coming out of Mitzrayim, no. We came out of Mitzrayim because it was a night of matzah. They turned it on its head. And maybe there's even a hint when you point at the matzah and say, "Ba'avuzeh, asa Hashem li b'tzeisim b'Mitzrayim," because of this, because of this, God brought me out of Egypt. It does sound a little bit like that we came out because of the matzah. Now, that's a mystical idea. It's not a rational idea. The idea that actually the Avos kept the Torah because they were tuned into the spiritual reality of Torah, and that's what these ideas mean. And we'll come back to that at the end. But of course, the real $64,000 question, which we really need to look at, is, well, the others didn't keep the Torah. They really didn't. There were lots of things that explicitly it says that they didn't do. Let's buzz through them quite quickly. We don't have time to look at all of the sources inside. But for example, Avram Avinu, Yaakov Avinu put up a matseva. He erected a matseva. A matseva is later prohibited, a standing stone to worship Hashem, is later prohibited by the Torah. Rashi jumps in there and says, yes, it's now prohibited because it was taken over by Avodah Zarah, but it used to be okay, but clearly later it was not okay. And of course, most pointedly, Yaakov Avinu married two sisters. Look at this statement from the Ramban, number 17. The Yesh Lishah. We're going to have to ask on this, he says. In Cain, if it's true that the Avos kept the Torah, Eich hikim Yaakov matseva, how could Yaakov put up a matseva later? The Nasash de'achios, how could he marry two sisters? Ukadas raboisenu arba, and maybe he married four sisters. Because according to Chazal, Bila and Zilpa were also sisters. Okay, but Amram nasa dadoto. And Amram married his aunt. Yocheved was the aunt of Amram. Moshe Rabbeinu hikin shtei shemesh rei matsevas, and Moshe Rabbeinu put 12 matsevas up as well. If you're telling me that Avram kept the whole Torah, how could these other people not keep the whole Torah? For Kavaloi Hashem Schara Davar, and God says, I'm giving Avram reward because he kept the Torah. What happened to that later? Why are all these other people doing things which is a clearly in breach of the Torah? And the Shridi Eish points out that even Avram Avinu couldn't possibly keep the whole Torah. What, he gave Machzis HaShekel? He can't give Machzis HaShekel before there's a Beis HaMikdash. You can't do Mechiat Amalek when Amalek's not yet been born. And he says, and if Avram kept the whole Torah, did he do a Brit Milah? Because it says in the Torah to do Brit Milah, even before God told him to do Brit Milah? Obviously not. That's absurd, he said. He can't possibly have kept the whole Torah. So we have to ask ourselves, what are the approaches? I want to give you seven approaches that will flesh out other ideas as to what does it mean that the Avos kept all of the details, literally, of the Torah. How do the Mefarshim understand that? So let's go through those seven ways of doing it. I've tried to be as comprehensive as I can be. And some of these ideas are well known and some are less known. So let's start. First of all, the Ramban gives one answer and it says, maybe it just means that they kept Shabbat. Shabbat, like we saw in the Meiri, is such a fundamental. It had its Zikaron Lamaaseh Bereishit, Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. And again, Yetzias Mitzrayim, not the historical event, but the idea that God runs the world and is active in history. That's what it means that they kept the whole Torah, because Shehi Shekula Kekol HaTorah Kula. Keeping Shabbos is like keeping the whole Torah. So that's what it means when it says they kept the whole Torah, that they kept Shabbat. Okay, and we see Midrashim, Yosef kept Shabbat, etc. Yaakov kept Shabbat. So maybe it just means that. That's what they kept. That's one approach. A second more famous approach is that they kept the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. I'm sure you've heard this before, but look at the Ramban. This we need to look at in a little bit more detail. V'anira elai midat rabbaseinu. I think what Chazal means are as follows. Shelamad Avram Avinu HaTorah Kula, Baruch HaKodesh, okay, Shelamad Avram Avinu HaTorah Kula Baruch HaKodesh, that Avram Avinu kept the whole Torah through Ruach HaKodesh, V'asak Ba Ubatami Mitzvahs V'Sodaseah, and he had access to the deep resonance of what that Torah is, V'Shama Atah Kula K'misha Einu Mitzvah V'Oisa. Now this is getting interesting. He kept the Torah on the basis of somebody who was volunteering to keep the Torah. He didn't have to. He was tuning in. Ushmirasa oisa haya ba Eretz Yisrael bilvad, and he only therefore kept it in Eretz Yisrael, because only in Eretz Yisrael is there really a true spiritual vibe of Torah. And since the Avos were tapping into that vibe voluntarily, if you like, only in Eretz Yisrael were they able to really do that. The Yaakov b'chutz laaretz nasa achios. Yaakov married Rachel in chutz laaretz, not in Eretz Yisrael. Cain Amram. Amram married his auntie in Egypt, not in Eretz Yisrael. Ki yemitzvos mishpat elokei haaretz hei, because the Torah and Eretz Yisrael are inextricably connected. The afa pishus are b'choy b'saygut b'chol mokim, even though we have to keep kosher, even in Brooklyn, even in London, even in Australia. Kfar Rams and Rabbi Seinu Hasoid Azer, the rabbis have already indicated to us, and I will explain to you later that mitzvahs only really fully spiritually connect in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, they apply on a Torah level also in Chutz Laaretz. You still have to keep the Torah outside, but it's not the same thing at all. What about the Matseva? The Matseva is an exception. The Matseva they did in Eretz Yisrael, but that's because it didn't used to be an Aveira, he says. But all the things that were then, if you like, technically prohibited, marrying two sisters, marrying your aunts, they only did in Chutz Laaretz. Now, there's a problem with this, of course. Yaakov was married to Rachel and Leah, but he was still married to them when he came into Eretz Yisrael. So how does that work? So the Ramban later on, in an astonishing piece later on, I brought you in the footnotes, the Ramban says that Rachel died very soon after she came into Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Rav Litag suggests that actually maybe the order of Binyamin's birth and Rachel's death is not chronological in the Torah. But the Ramban doesn't say that. But the Ramban says, from the minute they entered Eretz Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu was Poresh from Rachel. He did not have any more marital connection with Rachel, because as far as he was concerned, the minute he crossed the border, he's not allowed to have two wives. And then Rachel died shortly thereafter. And that's an astounding understanding of the way it works, that he married these two sisters, but then the minute he crossed back into Israel, he basically said to Rachel, I'm really sorry that as far as I'm concerned, you're not really married to me anymore. I'm not going to connect with you in any kind of marital way. And then she died, which is a very interesting way of looking at that. That's what the Ramban there says. So the Eretz Yisrael Chutz Laaretz connection is important. I brought you the source in 21, which the Ramban referred to, which says that even though you live in Chutz Laaretz, you still have to keep mitzvahs. Why? Chazal say, so that you'll know what to do when you come back to Eretz Yisrael. And there were many gedolim over the years. I think there's a maaser of Rav Hutner. I think it's Rav Hutner put on his tefillin. He flew to Israel, and then he said, "I need to put on my tefillin again." Could have been Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. We'll come on to him in a second. And they asked him, "Rebbe, you already wore tefillin?" He says, "No, I wore tefillin in Chutz Laaretz. Chutz Laaretz tefillin. Putting tefillin on in London in the morning is not the same as putting tefillin on in Eretz Yisrael in the afternoon. It's a completely different spiritual reality, and therefore the Avos, who were tuned in, not as commanded like us, but they tuned in and volunteered, and Aynon was some of the Isa, so they did it in Eretz Israel, because that's where the command, that's where the vibe, if you like, is strong. So that's another approach. The third approach. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, well, listen, if you have to keep a chumrah, and in order to keep a chumrah, you have to break a mitzvah, which takes precedence, a chumrah or a mitzvah? So he says, obviously a mitzvah. You can't keep a chumrah, you can't keep a stringency at the expense of breaking a mitzvah. What's he talking about? He says that keeping the mitzvahs, not marrying two sisters, was, if you like, an extra for the avos. They weren't really commanded in that. But not keeping your word, that's a mitzvah. They had to keep their word. Yaakov promised Rachel that he'd marry her. Ah, Lavan tricked him. So now Yaakov has a dilemma, says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Yaakov has a dilemma. Do I marry Rachel like I promised her that I would? But in so doing, I'll end up married to two sisters. So for him, it's no contest. I have to keep my word. That's a mitzvah for a Ben Noach. Whereas not marrying two sisters was an extra. Fascinating. You know, where does it say in the Torah that you have to keep your word? So it's implied all the way through Sefer Bereishis that keeping your word is fundamental. I once heard Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, say that he brought one of the Mephoshim, I can't remember who it was, that said if there wasn't a mitzvah fundamentally to keep your word, then what good is Naaseh V'Nishma? The Jewish people said Naaseh V'Nishma. So they could turn around afterwards and say, just kidding. I didn't really mean Naaseh V'Nishma. I'm not going to do what I said. The answer is no. Clearly, Naaseh V'Nishma has to mean something for it to be relevant. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu kept his word to Rachel, even though it meant he had to marry two sisters. Fine. Let's move on. The fourth approach, which I'll do quite quickly here, the Gur Aryeh says, actually based on a Ramah, there's a tshuva of the Ramah. The Ramah says, Avram Avinu kept all the mitzvahs. That's all the Chazal said there in Kiddushin. It doesn't mean anybody else did. It means that he did. Other people were really very individually connected with mitzvahs. The Maharal says Yitzchak was connected with a certain kind of mitzvah here. Yaakov was more connected with Shabbos. They were all connected in different ways individually, but Avram was the one that kept the whole Torah. Look in this line of the Ramah. He says, Imhu Shamar. If it says that Avram kept the Torah, and Shebeisa Loi Shamru, then his family didn't keep the Torah. Rakachokanim Usehanim Salahem. Only the kind of the etiquette or the ethics that were passed on to them. Hainu Zayin Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Avram kept the Torah, everybody else kept Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, and therefore don't worry too much of the other. He says, therefore, that you can see Yaakov married two sisters, he obviously didn't keep the Torah. And that's another approach. I think a very important approach of the Gur Aryeh is that there's a difference between positive and negative mitzvahs. The Maharal says the following. When it says that the Avos kept the mitzvahs, it means they kept the positive mitzvahs. Why? Because they were einu mitzvah va'isa. They didn't do it because they were commanded. They did it because they volunteered. To volunteer, he says, for a positive mitzvah has relevance. Look at what he says briefly here. Let me read a couple of lines from 24. Even though all mitzvahs are worth keeping, they're all wonderful. Why would they not want to do all of them? He says the following. Someone who has no obligation, or a woman might be exempted from certain mitzvot, it's still a mitzvah for them to volunteer and get reward. That's only for a positive mitzvah. About mitzvahs loy taseh, but for a negative mitzvah, she'ein kibul schar al mitzvahs loy taseh, ma'acha shelo nitzdavu. What is the point of doing a negative mitzvah when you weren't told to? Lama yikaimu, why would you want to even keep it? And he gives some examples. He says, a woman, for example, is exempted from sitting in a sukkah. So can she sit in a sukkah? Yes. Should she sit in a sukkah? Yes, she gets mitzvah, she gets a schar for that. Why? Because it's an expression of ahava. We'll see in a minute the idea of ahava and yira. Positive mitzvahs represent that ahava. But let's say a woman is exempted from the prohibition of going onto a cemetery if she's a kohenet. She's married to a Cohen or the daughter of a Cohen. Let's say a woman says, well, I'm not going to go on a cemetery. I'm going to keep that mitzvah as well. Did she achieve anything? No. What did she achieve? Nothing. The point of keeping a negative mitzvah, says the Maharal, is you're doing what God told you to do. And there's a Yetzirah against it. If God never told you to do it, then you're not achieving anything by just not doing something. In fact, you may be doing something wrong because you're not engaging in the world in which God said you can. God said that a woman can go on to a cemetery. So why would she not? There's mitzvahs to do there. She can daven, she can go to a leviah, if she's a kohenet, etc. So why would she not go? The Maharal brings a very, very interesting example of this. There's a halacha that we don't wear tzitzit next to a grave. Loig l'rash. It's loig l'rash. What does that mean? That the dead are exempted from mitzvahs, and therefore it's mocking them on some level that you're wearing tzitzis or tefillin right next to a grave, and they can't do it and you can. That's a very big insensitivity on our part. And yet, says the Maharal, there's no problem burying a dead body in a shatnas. Why is that not loig l'rash? Why is that not saying, I'm not allowed to wear shatnas, but you can do whatever you like. You don't have any mitzvahs anymore. Why is that not loig l'rash? And the answer, he says, because that only applies with a positive mitzvah. There's no benefit to keeping a negative mitzvah if you're not obligated. So there's no mocking of a dead body, if you like, that they're not obligated in shatnas. Who cares? It's not relevant. Whereas a positive mitzvah, even somebody who is not obligated would want to volunteer wherever they can. And this is a really fundamental idea in Judaism as well, in terms of mitzvahs aseh lo yisaseh. Have a look with me for a second in source number 26. This is a Ramban. The Maharsha says that's why the word asa is so important. They did the mitzvahs. But look at this Ramban. Mitzvahs aseh gedoyle mi mitzvahs lo yisaseh. This is an important hashkofa today for everybody. Doing a positive mitzvah is more important, is greater than not doing a negative mitzvah. Even though the punishment for doing a mitzvah, loisaseh, is greater than the punishment for an aseh, but the merit of doing a positive mitzvah is greater. K'moshe ha'ahava gedolim mihayira, because ahava, love and connection, is greater than fear, than yira, than refraining. Ki amakayim va'ose begufu mamoino, because if you do something with your body, with your money, rotzan adainav, and you do what God wants of you to do, hu gadol mihanishma me'asos harabeinav. That's a greater religious expression than simply not doing what God said not to do. Ulekach amru, that's why they said, asi asei v'doche loitase. There's a principle in halacha of asei doche loitase, which again, I'm sure you're familiar with. If there is a clash between two mitzvahs that come up at exactly the same time, and in order to do one, you break the other simultaneously, the positive mitzvah overrides the negative mitzvah. Let me give you two examples of that. Yibum is a classic example. Yibum is a mitzvah for the woman to marry her brother-in-law. She married a man, the man died, he didn't have children, he has a brother, she has a mitzvah in the Torah to marry him. Yet she has a Torah prohibition to marry that same man. He's an incestuous relationship as an in-law, brother-in-law. So which wins over which? The answer is the positive mitzvah pushes aside the negative mitzvah, asei dechel asase. Is it dechuya? Is it hutra? Not getting into that now. So too, the Gemara says, what if someone needs to have a brit milah, but they have a tzara'at on the exact makom hamilah? The tzara'at is there where they have to cut off on the orla. So there is a Torah prohibition to cut off tzara'at, and yet there is a Torah mitzvah to do a brit milah. And simultaneously, I'll be breaking the mitzvah and keeping another mitzvah. The answer is asei doche lo ta'asei. We would be allowed to do the milah. And therefore, this principle is expressed through the Avos as well. They didn't need to show self-control, if you like, by not doing the negative mitzvahs, because there's no benefit in doing that unless you're commanded to do that. Okay, fine. That's another approach. A sixth approach is that there was a kind of opt-in or opt-out. Let's do this a little bit more quickly. The Baalei HaTosfos turn around and say there was an opt-in that they did by Ruach HaKodesh. They basically didn't have to keep any mitzvahs, but they kept what they felt was the right thing for them to keep opting in through their divine connection. The Gurari has more of the other way around. There was an opt-out. They basically kept all of the mitzvahs, but not the ones which were not relevant for them. And the Or HaChaim actually expresses a little bit like a Novi and Harash Shah. Remember how this works. After the Torah is given, we say Lo B'Shamayim Hi. The Torah is not in heaven. And therefore, nobody can turn around. A Navi, even a prophet, can't turn around and abrogate a mitzvah and remove a mitzvah. That would be Baal Tigra, or add to a mitzvah, Baal Tosef. They can suspend one on a very temporary basis and say, like Eliyahu and Har HaKarmel, you're allowed to bring a korban now, even though it's not in the Bet Migdash. But they can't. Eliyahu was not able to turn around and say, from now on, you're always allowed to bring korbanos outside the Beis HaMikdash. He had no power to do that. However, before Matan Torah, says the Orach Chaim, Loi B'Shamayim, he was not the same. As a Navi, and Avram, and Yitzchak, and Yaakov were Nevi'im, as Nevi'im, they were allowed to suspend Torah mitzvahs through their Nevuah whenever that was appropriate. Just like later, a Navi would have a more limited power, but before the Torah was given, things were far less crystallized, and they were able to do that as well. He also understands that the mitzvahs before the Torah were like mitzvahs kiyumit. Look at this Orach Chaim with me, number 31. Even after the Torah was given, there's some mitzvahs you can do them if you want, but if you don't, then there's no problem. And if you don't do that, let's say a man says, I don't want to wear tzitzis. I'm not interested. Don't want to wear. I'm not going to wear a four-cornered garment. I'm not interested in tzitzis. So he's missing out, but he's not doing enough era. Kamo Kain, so too, Hayamiyom Bara Elokim Adam, from the day that God created mankind, V'chala Torah, Chutz Mizayin Mitzvahs, okay? They were all of the Torah apart from the Zayin Mitzvahs. So that was existence. It existed in the world. V'ha'avos Letzad Chavivusam B'Hashem, they wanted to opt in to that extra. V'chashkam Be'osha Elyon Kimo Kol. Kimo Akol, they kept everything. Just like you might want to keep today an optional mitzvah. You don't have to, but you can. So too, all of the mitzvahs were on the level of optional. So we have lots of very fundamental answers. Just let's summarize. Some answers include that they only really kept Shabbos, or they only really kept in Eretz Yisrael, or only Avraham Avinu really kept, or they only kept what the Ruach HaKodesh opted into or opted out of, or they only kept the positive mitzvahs and not the negative mitzvahs, or they only kept mitzvahs, if you like, on a basis of an optional basis. Selected based on the prophecy. There are some technical answers as well, which actually open up the last thing I want to talk about. Sorry, we're a bit short on the time because of our little break in the middle. Next time, if I know there's going to be a break, I'll try and arrange for there to be ice cream or something so that you can have an interlude, but I'm not promising, okay? The Radvaz says, listen, I'm going to give you a technical answer. How could Yaakov marry two sisters? I'll tell you how, because they were converts. They were converts to Judaism, and once they converted, they were no longer related to each other. They were no longer related, because anyone who converts to Judaism is like a newborn child. So when Rachel and Leah converted to Judaism, they're now no longer sisters. Oh, problem solved. Is that like a more technical answer? But what does that tell you? That tells you that the Avos were Jewish in the Radvaz's eyes, and that they actually had to convert on some level from non-Jewish to Jewish. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very different answer. He says that the reason he could marry two sisters is because they were not Jewish. And for a non-Jew, there is no prohibition of marrying two sisters. Why? Because there's no kiddushin. Without kiddushin, there's no arayas. And since Rachel and Leah, if you like, were non-Jewish women married to Yaakov as a non-Jewish man, or a less than Jewish, or a proto-Jewish man, they didn't have any of these prohibitions. But there's a very big distinction between those two approaches, which is that one sees the others more as Jewish, and one sees the others more as non-Jewish. And we'll finish with a discussion of that in a couple of minutes. There is an answer. I think it's the Chizkuni suggests that Rachel and Leah may have been born from two different mothers. It's interesting. It's speculation. We don't think that, right? We know they're both the daughters of Lavan, but we also know they didn't look like each other. And therefore, on some level, you know, they had a different kind of appearance. So maybe they are born from two different mothers, which also would mean that they were not prohibited to a Ben Noach as two sisters. There's a lot more to say, and I only want to really say two more main sort of topic issues. There is a machloikus in number 35, which I want to look at for a second, which ask the question, okay, let's cut through all of this. When the Avos kept the Torah, are they doing it in some kind of rational way, or are they doing it in some kind of mystical way? Look at this. Ad achshav lo nitna Torah. The Torah was not given yet, says the Midrash. V'harikstiv v'Avraham ha'ab, but doesn't he say about Avraham, ekev asher shama Avraham b'koli, da 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 da. U'meheichan lamad Avraham es ha'Torah. So where would he know the Torah from? Look at this. Rav Shimon bar Yochai Omer, Rav Shimon bar Yochai says, Nasu shtei kleyotav k'shnei kadim shel mayim. His kidneys were like two jugs of water. V'hayonoyvim Torah, they overflowed Torah. The kidneys in the thinking, the symbolic thinking of Chazal, were the hidden secret parts of the body that give deep seated advice to the person. I brought you a source there from one of Rabbi Slivkin's analyses of the kidneys in the thinking of the rabbis. So one version says the kidneys did it. And the other, Rabbi Levi, says, no, he worked it out for himself. This, again, could be part of the machlokes going on. One of the views sees that it's a deep-seated, inner, mystical connection to the mitzvahs, the ideas of the mitzvahs, the ruchnius of the mitzvahs. And the other sees it as a rational, moral, ethical focus on keeping Torah. And in your own time, if you have the chance, I'd really like you to look at the Shem Yishmol in number 37, and the Nefesh HaChaim in number 39. The Shem Yishmol and the Nefesh HaChaim go down this mystical route. The Shem Yishmol, for example, says that Yaakov, when he peeled, again, think of this when you hear the Torah this week, when Yaakov peeled off the twigs in order to do what he did in Laban's house, that was a fulfillment of wearing tefillin. He says, you can't do that today. I can't do that today. If we go outside and peel twigs and say, well, I'm connecting with the mitzvah of wearing tefillin, then lo ase klum, it doesn't do anything. You just didn't wear tefillin. But for Yaakov, before the mitzvahs were crystallized, he was able to tap into the inner spiritual meaning of what tefillin are and fulfill it in some other way. It doesn't mean that Yaakov walked around with tefillin on, he's saying. It means that Yaakov kept the mitzvah tefillin in a mystical manner. And the Nefesh HaChaim expands on that as well, as you'd expect him to, and says that every mitzvah there is a deeper inner spiritual reality, and that's what it means that the others were tapped into. So I'm going to speak just for a second at the end about this last issue, were they Jewish? But just to summarize, when Chazal say that the Avos kept the Torah, so we've seen a number of pshat approaches about their lives, about Sheva mitzvahs, and we've seen a number of drash approaches, maybe even remez and sod approaches, which talk about the idea that they kept different types of Torah, either spiritual versions of Torah, or positive mitzvahs, or mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, or the Shabbos, or etc., etc. But there's a lot of thinking about this, and each of those ideas brings out an aspect of what mitzvahs are. What is a positive mitzvah? What is a mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael? Let me just end with something which I read many years ago, which has always intrigued me, which is a statement, an analysis of the Parshas Drachim. Parshas Drachim was Rabbi Yehuda Rozanz, who lived in Constantinople around 300 years ago, and he wants to claim that there is an ongoing dispute within the Chumash, within Chazal, and within the Mefarshim on this question. Were the Avos Jewish? And I want to leave you with this. I go over by just a minute. I hope you don't mind. And he says the following. He understands that it's a machlokas between the Midrash and the Bavli. The Midrash says they were not Jewish. The Bavli says they were Jewish. The French Rishonim says they weren't Jewish. The Spanish Rishonim say they were Jewish. And he brings all the evidence. On the one hand, it seems they weren't Jewish because they followed the male line, they married paternal sisters. On the other hand, they were Jewish because of they kept Shabbat, and the Eretz Yisrael was acquired by Chazaka, only works for Jews. There's evidence either way. But then I think the genius idea, he says, and this was the fundamental disagreement between the Avos themselves. One group said that we are Jews. We are now Jews. We're no longer non-Jews. And the other group says, no, we are still non-Jews. We just have some extra mitzvahs. So, for example, Yehuda and Tamar, he says. Yehuda felt that they were Jewish. And therefore, Tamar committed adultery because she was married already. She was a Shomeret Yavam. She was already connected to Sheila. Whereas Tamar said, no, we're not Jewish. I'm not married to anybody. And therefore, I can sleep with you, Yehuda, and I've not committed any kind of crime at all. Reuven and Bilhah, a lot depends on whether they were Jews or non-Jews. What is the status of Bilhah? Yosef said, we are not Jewish. And the brothers said, we are Jewish. And that may be, says the Parashas Drachim, a way of explaining, just looking forward to a couple of weeks from now, when the brothers and Yosef are arguing with each other. So Chazal say that they argued about the following. Yosef brought back evil reports of the brothers and said they eat Eva Minachai. They are calling the sons of Bilhar and Zilpah slaves, and they are mixing with Canaanite women inappropriately. He brought Lashon Hara back. Says the Parashas Drachim, that's exactly the point. Yosef says, we are non-Jews. And therefore, if you eat from an animal which you shech, which is not yet fully still, which is still twitching, that's Eva Minachai. And the brother said, what are you talking about? We're Jewish. Once you shecht an animal, you can eat it. Eva Minachai changes for Jews. So they disagreed. Bilhar and Zilpah, Yosef said, we're non-Jews. And therefore, when as far as I'm concerned, the son of a maidservant is a free person. There's no such thing as a shivka kananis. Whereas the brother said, no, we're Jews. If you think that this is a shivka, then you're calling these people slaves. And that's not appropriate. So too, Yosef said, you're mixing with the kananim and you have to make some kind of a barrier because we're all non-Jews together. And the brother said, no. We're Jews. That's enough of a barrier. Don't worry about it. And maybe this maybe flows through the whole of Sefer Bereishis' underlying elephants in the room. What are these people? Are they Jewish or are they not Jewish? And do they even agree with each other on this? And maybe I'll set you some homework to think about. Maybe look at all of the things that they're arguing about throughout Sefer Bereishit, and maybe you can fit them into this fundamental question. What were they? Yes, Jewish or not Jewish? Okay, so that's an idea that I wanted to let you think about. It's on the sheets. That's all we have time for. I do apologize. We went over by 3 or 4 minutes, but we lost 3 or 4 minutes in the middle. Hopefully we made them up. And next week, like I said, we're going to be looking at Rav Sacks, Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Kook, Be'ezrat Hashem, this idea of Brit Avot and Brit Sinai. And with that, we'll finish this series. The week after, we'll be looking at Hanukkah stuff, because it's Hanukkah. And then we get into the lesser discussed topic of Pilagshim and taking a concubine, which is another undiscovered country within Sefer Bereishis. In case anyone is thinking of taking a concubine, please don't do that until you've heard the shir, at least, and then we can discuss it further. That's just a piece of general friendly advice. All right, I'd like to wish you goodbye. Have a good week. Sorry again about the problems with the internet, but we'll see you next week. Please, God.